Hallelujah, we have a big man. Welcome into Scramble, everyone, here on Crack Sidewalks, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann, Phil Bush with you. Luke, man, the force is strong with this one.
Yeah, absolutely. We should probably warn everyone, the hyperbole machine is on 11.
Yeah, we're in all seriousness, we're going to see how excited we should be, hint a lot, about Luke Fisher after his debut against Arizona State. We're going to break down that game in today's show. Talk about the departures, because we really didn't touch on that before last week's game. And we're also going to look ahead to the Marquette Golden Eagles. But, Phil, in all seriousness, Luke Fisher, I realize it's only one game, but what a game. He really exceeded my every expectation in his first game in a Marquette uniform.
I believe within the first 2 minutes he exceeded the expectations I had going into that game. I legitimately thought he was going to be serviceable. We were going to get 20, 22 minutes out of him. He was going to do some nice things. He was going to demonstrate potential, but we were not going to come away with some sort of overwhelming sense of how good he can be. We may have found like what I can only hope this is his average game. Right. I hope this isn't a one-time thing.
Yeah, I mean, there are just so many things to like about what he brought to the game. Obviously, you know, the simple answer is just height. But and when you look at the stat sheet, it's great. 9 of 11 from the floor, 9 boards. It seems like he had 9 boards for most of the second half. I guess in the late in the second half, he just didn't have one ball bounce his way to get him that double-double. And he had 5 blocks as well. Just really just a great stat line. But just beyond the box score, Phil, I just love just watching the game. I just love just the way the defense looked with him in it and just having a clog in the middle that just has not been there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the thing is, you know, so he had the 5 blocks, which is fantastic, but the number of shots he altered alone probably doubled that at least. And the other thing is his presence, if he can play straight up and alter shots or block shots, it totally changes the dynamic of the defense. You know, it allows the on-ball defense at the perimeter to be a lot more active and a lot more risky, if you will. I mean, it's amazing the difference he makes in say, a player like Juwan Johnson, who has at times struggled with man-to-man defense and staying in front of his man. With Luke Fisher kind of anchoring the center, that liability is not there as much because Juwan Johnson can kind of be aggressive and so can the rest of the guards. And if they get by him, well, Luke's waiting there to kind of disrupt the shot. It's kind of like what Frank Kaminsky did to Marquette in the Wisconsin game. Not that we want to think about it, but, you know, that's kind of the effect he had against Arizona State, which I was not anticipating.
Yeah, I would think as a guard, you know, I've never played basketball above any level than Marquette intramural, but as a guard, having a big man behind you that you know can block shots just must give you just a different comfort level when you're out there. You know, even while you never want to get beat going to the basket, you know if you do, there's a guy back there who can alter shots now, and just Marquette has not had that. And I think that's why, you know, with Luke Fisher, I know we joke, you know, we don't want to about his impact, but, you know, I know we don't want to overstate it, but I don't want to understate what he brings either, because he changes the team. He really does, because he's just an element Marquette has not had. He is a true center, and he alters the game on both ends of the floor. And when you're a guard and you have a big man behind you ready to block shots, you just have to be so much more comfortable out there playing defense.
Right. Well, if I were to ask you one thing about his game, you know, and there was a lot, like we said, our anticipation was not that he would, you know, be that what appeared to be very good. But if you had to pick one thing out of his game that surprised you against Arizona State that he either demonstrated he can do or you didn't know he had in his toolbox, what would you say that would be?
I surprised me. I guess I probably would say shot blocking. I guess I didn't think – I wasn't sure he – you know, I hadn't never really watched any film on it. I didn't know he was going to be a guy who would be – adept at blocking shots. I expected him to be able to score in the post, and I expected him to be able to rebound better than Marquette has in the past just because he's 6'11". I did not expect him to be as good blocking shots.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that, but the one that actually surprised me more, and maybe it was just I'm attuned to it or whatnot, but there was a couple of times where he just made really smart really intelligent passes that I was not anticipating. I remember one play in the first half where he was on the left side of the hoop in the low block, and his man guard, he got the ball at the block, and they came and immediately doubled down on him. And before the man could double down on him, he was looking opposite side at the three-point perimeter, got the, you know, threw a kind of a high-arcing pass over top of the double team coming, and found the open man. I think it was Carlino. I don't remember what the result of the play was, but there is no way he should have seen that double team coming. I think it was more of an anticipation of it coming and was able to find the open man. You know, so it's not like a, he's the ball's going in the post and it's never coming out. There were a couple of times where he made some really intelligent passes that just surprised me with as little Division I experience as he has, that he was able to make that smart play.
Yeah. There really was not an aspect of his game that I hated in that game.
Right. Other than the shoulder brace. That's the only thing about his game I hated.
He can wear undershirts and rec specs if he wants, and he can play like that. I don't care what he's wearing out there. He played great, and you know, obviously the question going forward, what kind of an effort, you know, is he going to be that great every night? Is he going to be better than that, or was that, you know, the peak of his performance? I hope it's not the last thing I said. I hope you know, Marquette can get similar efforts like that, and I don't see why not. I mean, okay, maybe 19-9 isn't going to happen every night, but he's, you know, as long as he's out of foul trouble, which he was, that was a concern you brought up in the previous podcast about a foul trouble, and that really wasn't an issue against Arizona State. But if he's out of foul trouble and he feels good enough to play 30 minutes, why not? Get him in the post. You see how well the offense moves with him. And I noticed the defense, Phil, they didn't really stick just to religiously to that 2-3 zone as much, I didn't think. You know, they mixed it up a little bit and played more man-to-man. And I guess that goes back to what we were saying with the comfort level of the shot blocker.
Yeah, I think they definitely played more man than they played zone. And when they did tend to play zone, it was usually when Fisher was not in there. I think they played some zone with Fisher in there, but they definitely played more man with him, and it's because they kind of have that crutch, if you will, of, well, if it gets by, we've got Fisher back there and he can do some things. I was surprised by the number of minutes he played. I would have, on the high end, I would have put it at 25 minutes. He played 33 minutes, which I think long term for the season seems like a lot. I mean, I know this season we don't have anyone coming off the bench that's even remotely close to equivalent. No offense to Steve or Juan, but they're just not that tall, and
they're not centers.
And clearly,
they're not centers.
You're right. They're not centers. So I don't think 33 minutes a game is sustainable. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, especially when on situations where Marquette's got two games in 3 days and stuff like that when we get into Big East play. But in that situation, considering he had not played a full game in over a year, he was ready to go, and I'm sure he probably would have played 40 minutes if Wojo would have let him. But you know.
Well, I was surprised he didn't start. I thought that was interesting that he didn't start.
Yeah, that was kind of my thing. You know, everyone was kind of saying, I bet he'll just come off the bench. I was thinking, why? what are you afraid of? Like, he goes out and plays 33 minutes. It's like kind of a situation with, what was his name? Eric Williams, who, you know, like he would start and then, you know, Crowder or somebody would play the rest of the game. But, you know, like, Luke Fisher didn't start. Like, why? You know, why would you not want the 6'11" guy out there for the tip? I'm sure Fisher will start every game from here on out. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Wojo just wanted like him to have a moment when he entered the game on his own for the crowd to make a big deal out of it. I don't know. I don't care. He played plenty of minutes and had a huge impact. But I did find it interesting why, you know, if he was going to play that many minutes and you finally get a center, why the logic of saying, we'll wait.
Yeah, well, you know what, I do think, in I don't want to segue yet away from Luke, but you mentioned if he was going to get that many minutes. I do think that it's a very revealing thing about Wojo. I think he played the hot hand. I mean, he kind of said, all right, Luke's doing some good things. We're going to leave him in there. You know, same could be said for Dwayne Wilson and Juwan Johnson. I mean, they both played season high minutes, and I think it's because, you know, it was kind of Wojo saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And You know, so I think we'll see if that's going to be the case. I applaud that.
Yeah,
that's
I love it when a coach
different
does not,
than the previous
doesn't
regime.
Just stick and be a slave to rotations. And he like, I love it when a coach can say, "Dude, this guy's killing it out there. Let's keep this going." And but yeah, you're right. And that's some like other things I do want to get into about the game is the performances from some other guys and whether it was an effect of having Fisher in there and freeing them up for stuff. Or was it them turning a corner? And I definitely want to start with J-A, lowercase J-U-A-N. I really is my biggest goal for Juwan Johnson is for everyone to know how to spell his name. And I'm like 95% I got it right just there, but I am almost certain that it is J-A, lowercase J-U-A-N. It's not a capital J, the second one, and it's not Juwan Johnson. It is Jawan. And people are going to learn this kid's name if he can keep scoring 22 points regularly like he did against Arizona State. Because he was playing with some confidence, looked like he had some swagger back, and that was just missing really for three, four, five games there.
Well, to go to the spelling thing, I don't know that I necessarily created, but I'm heavily riding the using his initials on Twitter with the middle J low.
Yeah, that helps. That
just
helps.
To drive home the point.
I like that.
You know. So it's capital J, lower J, capital J. Having said that, yeah, he played wide open. What I'm curious is last year his best game was against Arizona State. So maybe he just doesn't like devils. He's a good Catholic boy and is averse to devils.
But his coach is a former Blue Devil.
Let's not go poking holes in my ridiculous logic. But I think Juwan Johnson's game is favored by kind of the wide open nature. And I think one of the things that I'm going to be curious to see when we get into Big Ten or Big East, Big East
How
play.
How dare you speak that name?
I'll say 10 Hail Marys and I'm not even Catholic. When we get into Big East play and teams value the ball more, I wonder if we'll see, the same or a different Juwan Johnson because the speed of the game and Arizona State to call them loose with the ball would be, a significant understatement. I think he and Juan are both very good in the open court and very good kind of when you can get out and run. A team that's going to pack it in and not let you run on them, I'm curious to see if Juwan can keep it consistent and put it together to really have a good offensive game against a set defense.
Just getting him that many minutes and seeing him deliver is so satisfying to me because I hope he continue. He's going to considering the roster right now, but to see him continue to get more minutes and more opportunities and keep delivering, I think we'll see a lot more games where he's north of 25 minutes, and maybe we'll start to see what high school evaluators saw when they gave him five-star status. Couple years ago, and I love when he's driving to the basket, really, and when he attacks the basket and can make good decisions, and he was certainly doing that against Arizona State. And meanwhile, the development of Dwayne Wilson continues, and I mean that in a positive way. He another solid game for him, 19 points, 5 of 8 from the floor, got to the free throw line a lot. That was the only place he was weak. If he would have made his free throws, he would have been north of 20 points, maybe had 25 points if he could shot the free throws a little bit better, but Dwayne continues to look like a guy who is going to be a cornerstone of the program for a few years here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the free throws, that one I feel very confident in saying that's an outlier. He's shot better than 80% throughout the season, so just had an off night at the line. Towards the end of the game, they felt like those might have been a little more important than we originally thought they were, but it worked out okay, so no harm, no foul. But yeah, absolutely. He was steady again, and I think it's, yet again, if you go back and you watch every game he's had this season, every single game he's done something significantly better than the game before and little things better than the game before. So he's constantly improving. The Wisconsin game, he had some out-of-control drives against some of the defense and didn't feed it out when he should have. Against Arizona State, I don't remember a time where he kind of went into the trees without a plan. He was very controlled, and he drew fouls, and he was good on the break. I think it's going to be phenomenal. I'm just really curious to see if he develops. His handle's still a little loose, but so be it. I'm just curious to see if he's going to become a pure two, or if he's going to kind of develop into a point guard. That's where I'm most curious.
Well, I
to
think
see.
Looking at the roster breakdown, especially going into next year, I kind of got him penciled in as the starting point guard for the next few years, because
I would hope so. I don't know that that's he's not a pure point. If he is the starting point guard, that's fine, but he's not a traditional point guard.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're starting Niskoviak or some transfer to be named at the point next year, I mean, Dwayne's your starting point guard next year, and I think he's going to stick there, and I'm cool with that.
I think he's better with the like driving to the basket, and you know, you don't always want your primary scorer to also be the guy that brings up the ball, because it tends to stagnate the offense. But Wojo will figure it out. I have confidence.
It's worked out for UConn. With the Napiers and Kemba Walkers of the world. Not to say he's necessarily that type of player, but I personally love a good scoring point guard. Is you know, as long as he's not selfish, and Dwayne's not, and Dwayne has made some pretty
passer.
Pretty clever passes there when he gets in the paint. I think having Fisher there only adds to that, because I think when these guys are start driving to the basket, they're gonna be handing that ball off with a lot more confidence to Fisher, knowing that he can get that ball up above his head where no one can reach it and throw it down. Whereas, guys like, Stephen Wan kind of got swallowed up in there when they were playing down low. So, again, we kind of go back.
Well, you know what was the other thing that was interesting about Fisher that we'll have to see is he was only one shooting foul that he had, and he went 1-for-2. I would anticipate, if he's going to continue to kind of bang away down there, seeing him going to the line more, it'll be curious to see what kind of free throw shooter is. We're a little spoiled with the Devontae Gardners of the world.
If he's going to keep going 9 of 11 from the floor, you better believe teams are going to be hacking him and putting him to test there. But, yeah, 1 of 2, we'll see long term. But it looked like he had a pretty good free throw stroke for what it's worth.
Yeah, well, he had a nice little mid-range jumper. You know, he hit that 10-footer that was really pretty from the elbow.
There was nothing I hated about Fisher's game in his debut.
Right. It was the first time in a long while that I never uttered the word no when someone was doing something.
Yeah, so love the game. We'll see, if that was an outlier as far as performance. Because, who knows if we'll continue to get performances like that from Juwan and Dwayne in the future. And I don't know if their performances were necessarily a result of Fisher being there, or if it was just, they just had good games. But whether it was a result or not, Fisher's going to continue to be there for the rest of the season, barring injury.
Right.
And so I hope we continue to see more performances like that from Wilson and Juwan, and we'll see how it kind of affects other guys. Matt Carlino didn't have his best game. Steve Taylor didn't get a lot of minutes. I think that's largely due to the fact that Fisher was just absolutely in his zone. Coach was kind of like, yeah, let's let him roll. And Juan Anderson had a good game.
Well, yeah, because if you look at it, Juan Anderson had the most minutes. He had 37 minutes, and Fisher had 33 minutes. And most of the time, you're not going to want to put the three people you can play in the post in the game at the same time. So I think Steve Taylor kind of suffered from, the hot hand getting played. I would anticipate he'd get – I mean, you've got an eight-man roster. Steve Taylor is going to have to get significant minutes in games if this roster is going to be successful.
Yeah, because I will say, if you want to nitpick and say anything negative about that game – they did get a little gassed there towards the end, and they did look tired, and that's how Arizona State, I think, kind of rallied and made the final score a lot closer than it really was. I mean, it was a 7-point win, but it felt like a 20-point win the way Marquette played. But, I think those guys are going to get minutes. They just have to going forward. The H-Strong is the new slogan, which I guess I kind of like.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. And Sandy Cohen only got 3 minutes, no one should read into that. I think Wojo was playing the hot hand, and Sandy Cohen, to be fair, he had two freshman mistakes in a row, and Wojo kind of went, okay, you're going to sit for a little bit, teachable moment, and then as a result of where the game was at and the hot hand, he just didn't put him back in. And the last, if the first 30 minutes had continued the last 10 minutes, I think you would have seen Cohen come back in, but when it started to get a little tight, I think Wojo decided, all right, let's not make any more silly mistakes, though he did leave Carlino in after airmailing about three different passes out of the backcourt.
Yeah, you got to play somebody.
So somebody's got to play. But yeah, I think Cohen will get minutes. He'll certainly get minutes the next three games, yeah. You would think, not to disrespect our opponents, who I don't even know who they are or where geographically they're located. But they'll get some minutes over the next three games and kind of flesh out. And we'll see a rotation start to develop,
yeah.
I think.
And yes, I'm as long as Wojo's riding the hot hand, as long as one or two or three of those guys are hot on any given night, I think Marquette is going to be competitive going forward. But, you know, going back to the eight strong thing, of course, that's kind of the new rallying cry. I did want to talk about the transfers briefly here before we move on to the next few games. And, you know, just shortly after our previous podcast.
It's our 48-hour podcast.
Yeah, shortly after our previous podcast went live, you know, the news broke that Burton and Dawson were transferring. And, you know, Dawson transferring really wasn't a surprise. He was not getting any minutes and probably didn't have many minutes in his future at Marquette. So I kind of got his transfer. But the Burton thing, I think, surprised a lot of people, because I think when people looked forward in this and for Marquette having a big year next year and maybe beyond that, they kind of envisioned Burton being a part of that and being a key player. What did you make of the Burton transfer?
Burton, the most disappointing thing about the fact that he transferred was probably the fact that I thought Burton was the player I was most excited for during the Luke Fisher era. I think especially if the Arizona State game is not an outlier, I think Burton was the one that would have benefited the most from having Luke Fisher in that lineup. I think he could have just done amazing things and might have even have been our leading scorer. If he has a solid big man behind him, I think he can really be aggressive. So that from that aspect, I was disappointed. You know, kids make decisions. I mean, Burton's 19. He's had a very significant tragedy in his life. There's a lot of turmoil, a lot of stress. He's had his coaches changed on him. You know, I what I make of it is I think this is going to be one of those situations where, you know, based on things, you know, talking to various people, I think it's going to be a situation 3 or 4 years from now, both Burton and Wojo look back on and say, man, there was an opportunity missed there. If we could have found a way to work it out, I think everybody involved would have been a better off. But he made a choice that's you know, for him to make, and I wish him the best. I wish he stayed too.
And you know, a lot of people point out that he wasn't contributing this year, and it's not that big a loss. You know, short term, I'd agree it's not a huge loss right now, but I think long term, it's a loss I would rather not have dealt with, because I do think Burton's going to be a pretty good player at the college level, and who knows if he'll be a pro or not, but I think he certainly has potential there, especially if he stays 4 years in college. But
Well, and not to be cynical, but it's, you know, it's not a big loss if we lose him, but it's not like we got anybody else. You know, it's not like we traded him for a first round pick or something.
You know, it hurts depth-wise for sure. And
right, and yeah, he wasn't having a great season, but again, the makeup of the team is totally different this season than last season, and it was very guard heavy, and he needs space to maneuver, and it just wasn't clicking for him, and I think that was part of the factor in was he's a competitive guy. I'm sure he was frustrated and wasn't happy with his role or how things were going. You know, and you combine that with everything else, and I'm sure he's a local Milwaukee kid. I'm sure he's got, you know, people in his ear saying, "Oh, you're gonna be the next Dwayne Wade. You gotta go somewhere where they're gonna use you and stuff like that." So I'm sure it's a combination of factors. I'm sure, you know, there were opportunities for the coaching staff to maybe do things a little differently that might have changed the result. But, you know, it's just an unfortunate scenario. I think everybody would have benefited from him staying. But, you know, you got the team that you got, and we'll just roll with it and see what happens.
You know, like I said, he can be replaced, you know, for the short term as far as somebody bring in next year or whatever. But, you know, like I said, I think long term he could have turned into a really good player. But that's over with. He's moving on, apparently choosing between Iowa State and UCLA reportedly. So, you know, tough call. Am I going to lose?
Iowa State or Marquette South?
Yeah.
Which...
I mean, are we going to lose in UCLA or Marquette South with McKay there? So am I going to live in Ames or Los Angeles on somebody else's dime? I mean, you know, give me a minute. Tough call. But seriously, good luck to Deontay. I hate his future's not in a Marquette uniform, but you know, he's a, by all accounts, a likable kid and a talented player. So he's moving on.
Well, I'm sure the Bane hashtag haters are probably at least a little.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to miss the whole Bane thing.
Oh, see, that's where you and I are going to have to get in a fight. Yeah. I loved it.
I don't know. I just never really loved it. I was warming up to it, kind of like I did with automatic chance with Gardner, where I warmed up to it by the time he was a senior. I kind of got into it, but and I was kind of getting that way with Bane. I'm like, okay, now I kind of think it's a thing, and now it's over with. I'm like, now I don't have to love it anymore. But that's moving on. But the thing that it leaves with Wojo with now is he's got three scholarships to play with. I really have no idea what he's going to do with them. Jeff Goodman of ESPN posted his midseason transfer list on Thursday, and I was kind of scanning through it, you know, seeing if Wojo's going to do any holiday shopping here. You know, the one name at the top of the list is the one everyone jumped about when it first happened, was Shimi Ogele from Duke. And maybe people thought there was a tie there, being recruited by Wojo, going to Duke. By all accounts, there's really been no contact between Ogele and Duke, so and
that
Marquette.
That surprises me.
And maybe there has been. It just hasn't been reported, but... Yeah, I'm surprised that Marquette is like nowhere in the hunt for him. Like I know some big guns are going after him, like Kansas and Wisconsin, and you know, I guess SMU can be considered a power player now with the guys they kind of bring in. But Oregon, Creighton, Wichita State are all interested. But yeah, like I'm surprised that there has been like zero report of like any contact. And but it doesn't appear it's going to happen. So I as much as I would love Shimi Ogele to come to Marquette, because I think he'd be a great fit. He'd just slide right into that spot that Burton left at the three and be a very good player there. But the thing is, after that, the second best player Goodman listed is Burton, so he's not coming back. And then the third best player is Connor Frankamp, who's already committed to Wichita State. And after that, it's kind of a significant drop-off. You know, I don't know that much about all these players that he's listed, but there's nobody, like, just scanning the list of 50-something players that Goodman posted. It's not like he's like, there's not anybody I see like, oh, Wojo's got to get that guy. Like, that guy would help Marquette a lot.
Well, I think what's going to end up happening, I mean, we got three scholarships left. I think in an ideal world, and you can mix and match the ages, because you got a class balancing issue, because as of right now, the only player on a roster next year that's a senior is Steve Taylor. And if you bring in, you know, if you use all three scholarships on freshmen to add to the class we have coming in next year, you're going to graduate seven players at one time.
That's a bad idea. That would never happen. I mean, you'd have seven freshmen and half of them would probably transfer after a year. So, like,
you're Kentucky.
Yeah. And then they'd all go pro. But, yeah, there's no way Wojo's going to sign three more high school players. He may be one at the most.
I think ideally what he let me rephrase. Not what I think Wojo should do. What I think we should do is we need a JUCO. I think we need a graduate transfer, and then maybe a freshman or maybe a freshman transfer or whatever. But I think ideally what you'd look for next year is you need a graduate transfer point guard or a JUCO point guard that's got some experience. You know, maybe Dwayne Wilson is the starter at the point for 30 minutes, but I think you need a veteran to back him up, kind of play the quote-unquote Derek Wilson role. I also think you probably need a JUCO or a grad transfer center. I mean, you've got Matt Helt on the roster for next season, and you've got, you know, obviously Luke Fisher, but Helt is going to be a freshman, and freshman centers probably are the least valuable of any of the positions. They're just not ready really at that point in time. I mean, even look at Luke Fisher at Indiana. His first 10 games he contributed very little, and you know, extrapolating out the one game he had that for us we'll never lose again. But you need some sort of veteran center just to provide backup minutes to Luke Fisher and give Helt time to develop. And that's kind of the route
worth, the fourth best player Goodman has listed on that list is a 6'10 sophomore named Jordan Hare at Rhode Island, who, according to Goodman, he says he's left the Rhode Island twice now, and so I guess he's not sure what he's doing or where he's going. But so maybe there's a little nervousness about how committed he is to basketball or where he what his future holds. But a 6'10 guy who's apparently pretty talented, I have no idea if Marquette would have any interest in him. But I agree with what you're saying about I think a graduate transfer makes a lot of sense for Marquette, so we'll just have to wait until the spring for Wojo to see what he does with these.
Well, because they can play right away. I mean, that's the key, is you need players that can, you need a one-year rental is basically what you need.
Exactly. But I would say a position that I would – thing is, I would consider any position for a talented player. I wouldn't limit it to positions at all. But I think a position where Marquette could convince a good player to come in, it would be at the three, is, because you're losing Juan Anderson's graduating and Burton's gone. And if you want to be a little bigger and have a versatile wing player who could play the 2-3, I think there's a room on the roster for that. As long as you're not bringing in a guy who's demanding to be a starter and get a ton of minutes, that's kind of the thing you got to balance with. Is you're hoping some guy you can bring in can accept a role and recognize there are guys that are going to be on the team that already have established positions on the team. But I'm all
Well, that's an interesting. It kind of depends on. On really, I mean, this is where, Wojo being inside the program obviously has the best view. But the three has the potential to be log jammed. I agree with you, depending on the makeup and what players actually become, the three does have an opportunity to be log jammed next year, because for sure you're gonna have Juwan, who can play the three.
Yeah, but he's more of a two guard though.
He's a 2-3. It depends on if we're going with a two guard or three guard set. You've got, if Wally Ellenson is any good, he'd be a three. And
I guess Cohen.
Cohen. And then I could make a legitimate argument, and people may call me crazy, but I'd make a legitimate argument that Henry Ellenson could play the three and would actually probably be his best position.
Maybe so. I think probably 6'8", 6'9", or 6'10", I guess, whatever he is.
He's 6'10".
He's probably going to fit in at the four. It's going to be just a dynamic front court with Fisher in the middle and Ellenson at the four. But, these guys move around. That's one thing Henry Ellenson said during his entire recruitment. I don't want to play one position. So he's going to move around. Yeah, he's going to play the four and the three. And, hell, he may line up at point guard once just to – really get crazy. I don't know where, exact, but yeah, he's going to move around. But versatile players, I hate to use the term, but switchables.
Switchables? We're back to this?
But yeah, players like that. That's the thing. That's why I think Shimi Ojeleye would be an awesome fit at Marquette, because he could be a huge guard. He could play the wing, or he could go down and play the four at 6'8". But he doesn't appear to be in the mix for Marquette, or the other way around. Marquette does not appear to be in the mix for him at all. But we'll see what happens.
Well, if you had a gun to your head, for this is a nonviolent podcast, so let's make it a metaphorical gun. Which position would you say is the biggest need that Wojo absolutely has to get a player for next year?
I wouldn't hate a little more size. Maybe another power forward.
Okay. See, I would put it at the center. I would put it at the five, because I just. And I could be totally wrong. I just don't think, until Helt's at least a sophomore, that we have a legitimate backup five on the roster.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I could see it. But yeah, adding size would not be a bad thing, because we added size.
We added size for
the Arizona State game, and just wonderful things happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and one thing I meant to say earlier when we were waxing poetic about how awesome Luke Fisher is. Is it too soon to say that Luke Fisher is the best center for Marquette since Robert Jackson?
Thing is, Devontae Gardner was technically a center, but he played center. But yeah, as far as both ends of the floor, well-rounded. Yeah. Shoot, I guess so.
Otule mixed with Gardner. Would
yes,
have been
exactly.
The best center.
If you could mold them into the one gigantic Ox-Tule with Chris playing defense and Devontae playing offense, yeah, that would have been the perfect center, really. But off the top of my head, yeah, Luke, after one game, if we want to go ahead and put his jersey up in the rafters, but he's a great player. Like I said, I don't want to overstate it, but I don't want to understate it either. Luke Fisher is a very good player, and it is absolutely okay to be excited about him. because I think he's going to really be a difference for Marquette in the Big East. And I'm not saying they're going to win the Big East, but I think they're going to win a lot of games. If he can play like that for 18 games, heck yeah, bring it on.
Well, now, Joe, would you change your opinion? And we can get into the Big East prediction when we get to close to the DePaul game. But would you change your opinion that we had at the beginning of the podcast in terms of what Marquette's performance is going to be in the Big East after seeing Luke Fisher play?
Maybe a little bit, but also I would temper that because some teams in the Big East are better than I thought they were. Like, I think like Butler and Creighton are both better than I thought they were. And so I have to factor that in. I guess we'll have to go game by game in the next podcast. But yeah, we'll see. I think that some of those games or those weeks when Marquette has 2 games in 3 days, or 2 games in 4 days, I think that's going to be a tough turnaround for an 8-man roster. So I think that they're going to have some games where they look a little gassed and maybe get run out of the gym. But
I agree with that.
I will say this, and it's going to sound like I've got the pedal to the floor right here, but to be all in all seriousness, the tournament is not ridiculous to think about for this team because, with Fisher playing the way he did, and if they can get that kind of performance for 18 games of Big East play, it's not insane to think they could get, be above 500 and get close to 10 wins. It's not, like I said, it's not ridiculous. I know it sounds like I'm going 90 miles an hour here, but if Marquette, let's just say for the sake of argument, maybe Marquette could get 10 wins in Big East play. I think the committee would then forgive that disastrous Omaha loss, saying, all right, that was a team without Fisher, and now we're looking at the resume of a team with Fisher as we evaluate them as a tournament. Granted, I know the tournament seems so far off for this team because, they're nowhere near the tournament discussion at this moment. But with Fisher playing like that, and if the other guys can continue to have good games and Marquette can have great offensive and defensive efforts like we saw against Arizona State for, say, 12 to 14 out of the 18 Big East games, then, I think Marquette could get 9, 10 wins in Big East play. And then I think they would have a nice resume to bring to the committee depending who those 9, 10 wins are against.
Yeah, I guess my optimism is less cautious. I would say, again, extrapolating one game, I still think they're likely to hover around 500 in the Big East. But I do think there's going to be more consistency, perhaps. Because, again, Luke Fisher, if he can play this way consistently, he's going to bring stability to the team. It's just inevitable, especially on the defensive
end. It's just a huge element that wasn't there. And we're going to see exactly as we kind of progress, as we go through the Big East play now, see how well he can play over the course of the next 21 games, I guess.
Right. Well, let's be honest. I mean, he allows the team to play what I would call legitimate basketball as opposed to gimmicky basketball where they've got to overcompensate for their weaknesses by doing some playing weird defenses and doing some different offensive things that you just never
Wojo's
would
not
do.
Putting this thing together with loose parts and duct tape. I mean, he actually has a roster that he really likes and can work with. Granted, it's only 8 guys, but he's got every position filled, even though the center position is just 1 guy. But, I think Wojo has to be excited. And, it's funny because 1 game could just totally change our opinion, because if Marquette goes out and loses one of these next 3 games against these also ran
Alabama
A&M or North Dakota or Morgan State, then we'll be back in Eeyore mode, like, oh, well, tough season.
Yeah, that was nice.
Right now, as we record this podcast, sure, there is reason for optimism, cautious optimism, as Marquette goes into Big East play. I think Marquette will be a factor. They're not going to get pushed over. I know some of the KenPom rankings still have Marquette only getting 3-4 wins in Big East play right now.
Yeah, the guaranteed, quote-unquote guaranteed 3 wins in contention for 6.
But and thing is, those stats only take into account the entire season, but one of those games with Luke Fisher, correct?
Right. Well, right, exactly. Well, and one of the stats from the Arizona State game I meant to bring up earlier was, we went one of six from 3 in the game, and you say, well, that's pretty bad shooting. But we only took
That's the good thing.
That's the great thing. We won big, and we didn't even have to
take
three-point
shots. Exactly,
and
that's the thing I love about going forward. When Marquette is down in future games, because, you know, Marquette's going to be trailing and struggling in future games, I think they will be much less likely to try to shoot their way out of deficits. They're going to say, all right, we're down by 12 points. Let's just start feeding Fisher. And let's just keep going to Fisher and let him bring us back. And I think that will I think that will help Marquette win maybe one, two or so games that they would not otherwise win.
Right. Well, and the inverse is also correct. Teams will start to, you know, at some point, if, again, we've said it ad nauseum, but if Fisher delivers game in, game out, teams will start to have to double him. And when he gets doubled, if he can find the open shooter, Juwan Johnson, Matt Carlino, and Dwayne Wilson should absolutely be ready to pull the trigger. And if they can, they should have some wide open shots. And if they can't hit those, well, we weren't going to win anyway. But they should get some good looks. I mean, we should probably make the Matt Carlino a thing if Fisher can perform like this, because Carlino's going to get some open looks when they double Fisher.
Carlino struggled in his first game with Fisher. I don't think that's going to be the case every night. And as long as one or two of those guards can be on, and with Fisher's on, I like Marquette's chances against a lot of teams, to be honest with you. Like I said, I'm not ready to make room for a Big East banner, but Marquette's going to be a factor. Marquette is going to be a team that people are not going to like to face. Marquette's going to be a team that teams are not going to look forward to playing on the road. And we'll see how Marquette does when they get into Big East play. We'll kind of break down the Big East in our next podcast. As we head into the holidays here, three games that should, knock on wood, should be wins, Phil, with Alabama A&M at the Al McGuire Center. Woo-hoo! And then North Dakota and then Morgan State. Hopefully, Phil, that's three wins. And I think it should be just an opportunity, really, for everyone to get a little more comfortable playing with Fisher. Maybe fans get a better look at Fisher and see what kind of consistency he brings over three games or a total of four games then. And we'll see how, you know, other guys kind of rotate in there with, I'm sure guys, like you mentioned earlier, guys like Taylor and Cohen will certainly get more minutes than they did in the Arizona State game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just going to be some runtime. You know, Nebraska Omaha is off the schedule now. So hopefully it's three games where they can just put in good, solid work, get a good solid. I would hope for a blowout, but it's not required. But you know, I think they'll get some good run time and really just get it fine tuned for the Big East, because you know we're all excited about the Arizona State game, but that was their first game of them playing this new style. They had a week and a half off to prep. Now we're gonna see. You know, they play Alabama A&M on Friday and then turn around and play.
That's the 22nd.
That's North Dakota on Monday on the 22nd. So, you know, a 72-hour turnaround. That's going to be kind of a prep for the Big East and a dress rehearsal for that. So it'll be very revealing to see if this is the team, if Arizona State's what we've got going forward, or if that was just a really good
piece. I am personally excited to find out the answer. I remain very optimistic about Marquette's future with Luke Fisher, if not just this year, but definitely for the next few years, and to see how he teams with the guys coming in next year. Like I said, the front court of him and Ellenson next year looks so
ridiculous.
Exciting to me, and I really think that can be a great thing. But so far, so good. One game in. Hopefully, we're still saying the same thing next time we record a podcast after Christmas. But we do want to wish you all a Merry Christmas. As always, we thank you guys very much for listening. Scrambled Eggs, you can like us on Facebook, find our Facebook page, that's where we post the podcasts, as well as on iTunes. Hit us up on Twitter with comments, suggestions, questions, complaints, etc. I'm Joe McCann 3, Phil is MOOF23, and of course you can tweet us at the team page, Cracked Sidewalks, and or just comment on crackedsidewalks.com. Phil, final thoughts heading into the holidays?
Luke!
The force is strong with him. May it be with you all.
Yes.
Seashells and balloons, everyone. Merry Christmas.